Shabbat Shalom, everyone. When I think back to our family seders, Elijah's cup stands out for me. The food was great. It was wonderful to have the family gather together. But my memories are focused on Elijah's cup. See, Elijah's cup had a certain significance in our family. Once at my grandparents', my grandfather hid his hands under the tablecloth and he banged against the bottom of the table, causing the table to shake, and Elijah's cup moved all around. And my sister and I, we were amazed. Elijah had joined us. I may add that my grandmother was also amazed. She was amazed that by entertaining his grandchildren, my grandfather had managed to spill red wine all over her white tablecloth. Several years later, a new tradition emerged when my immediate family, when we hosted the Seder. Everyone would be cleaning their dishes in the kitchen, and my father would disappear into the dining room where Elijah's cup was alone on the table. And then from the kitchen, we would hear my father call out to us for me and my sister to come quickly. And when we came into the dining room, he would excitedly point out that the cup was now empty. Elijah had indeed been to our home. We never suspected that it was in fact my father who had been drinking all the wine. Today at my own Seder, I'd like to incorporate another tradition involving Elijah's cup. It's a tradition that was first introduced by the great Hasidic rabbi, Naftali Tzvi Horowitz. Horowitz taught that each Seder participant should pour some wine from their own personal cup into Elijah's cup. When everyone takes a little of their own wine and puts it all together, it shows a communal effort. And it symbolizes our hope that our own actions and our actions as a community for our entire people. The tradition of Elijah's cup first emerged as a symbol to welcome the great prophet. After the cup is poured, we all know this, we open the door and we recite the biblical verse, Elijah will return the hearts of parents to their children, v'heshiv lev avot al banim, and return the hearts of children to their parents, v'lev banim al avotam. We welcome Elijah, who helps us direct our hearts to one another. In other words, we welcome Elijah so that we can welcome each other. Opening the door for Elijah helps us keep the door open for each other. And that is exactly what I hope for. That as individuals and as a community, we can keep the door open. Doorways are an odd thing. They reveal a diametric opposite. They're both boundaries and points of entry. A closed door says, stay away. Stay out, do not enter. But an open door, it invites you in. Let's keep the door open. At first glance, this week's Torah portion, Tazria, has absolutely nothing to do with open doors or welcoming. The text methodically and vividly describes skin diseases and how people who are afflicted with skin diseases, how they should be treated. This parsha is a dermatologist's dream. But for the rest of us, maybe it's not quite as inspiring. The Torah teaches that someone who has one of these skin diseases is unclean and must be separated from the community. Bedad yeshev michutz l'machaneh moshavo, he shall live apart, his dwelling shall be outside the camp. What's remarkable about this parsha is not the commandment to isolate the afflicted, but the commandment to welcome him or her back. After the person who had the disease is no longer a threat to the community, the Torah takes great care in ensuring that that person is remembered. The recovered individual is not left alone to dwell on the periphery of the community. The Torah instructs us, it commands us that we must bring that person back in. And the instruction is clear. Be safe. Distance yourself and your community from dangerous situations. Yet when there's no danger, when it's safe, we must welcome. We must keep the door open. As a society, unfortunately, we have become very proficient at preserving distance. We keep people out, and for good reason. We live in a world, unfortunately, where there are real threats. We live in a world where we need security, we need fences, we need guards, we need alarms. These measures are necessary. While we preserve our safety, we do not need to sacrifice our hospitality. We can be both secure and welcoming. As a Sinai community, we already do so much to receive one another. Every Shabbat, I'm touched by those who volunteer their own personal time to serve as greeters and ushers. And I have to single out the Chai Society, a group that dedicates themselves to coming and greeting people on Shabbat and making sure everyone here feels comfortable. That's one way that we make people feel comfortable. Another way that sticks out in my mind, this past year on Rosh Hashanah, remember that this year on Rosh Hashanah, which is one of the busiest nights, where most synagogues, almost every synagogue, you need a ticket to come in through the door. Well, at Sinai Temple, we opened our services to the entire community, and we shared with them Rosh Hashanah Alive. It was a beautiful service, and it's something that we plan on doing again. Perhaps less well known is another welcoming program. It's called Shabbat at Home. It's a program where once a month, members from our communities host a Shabbat dinner in their home for young professionals from our Atid group. This is just a small sampling. We already do a lot to create a culture of welcoming, to follow in the spirit of the Torah and to welcome outsiders in. And I think we can do more. Later this month, Howard Lessner, our executive director, and I are hosting the first meeting of Sinai's very own welcoming committee. This committee has a very simple purpose: to work on how we as a synagogue welcome and receive people so that here in our temple, nobody feels like a stranger. To make this project a success, right now we need your help in two ways. First, I want each of you to email any suggestions, any ways that you think Sinai can be more welcoming, to a new email account that we just set up, welcome@sinaitemple.org. The address is written in the back of your Shabbat bulletins. It's on the last page of your Shabbat bulletins. And with your help, just by shooting us an email, after Shabbat, of course, with your help, we'll be able to identify places and ways to make Sinai a more welcoming community. Here's the second way I'd like you to help. Whenever you're in synagogue, whether it's here or any other synagogue for that matter, I want you to smile and introduce yourself to the person seated, to all the people seated around you. Not in the middle of the rabbi's sermon, of course, but nevertheless, I want you to introduce yourself to the people seated around you. It's a small but critical step. Too often, people come to synagogue, they come to connect to God, and they come to connect to community. But when ignored by the community, it feels like you're being ignored by God as well. Several years ago, I relocated to a new city, and on my first Shabbat in town, I went to a local synagogue. Nobody talked to me. The next week, I went back. I decided to give it another shot. I went back, and I sat down, and a few minutes later, someone approached me, and I was really excited. I thought, finally, someone from the community is reaching out. And then that person said, "Shabbat Shalom, by the way, you're seated in my seat. Can you please move?" That Shabbat, I walked home. I was deflated, I was sad, and it was one of the worst Shabbats of my life. That Shabbat, I was alienated from community, and I felt alienated from God. The simplest thing, like introducing yourself to the person in the next seat, can have a transformative effect. It will bring us closer together and closer to God. And we learn that lesson in our liturgy. We learn it from the Shema. The Shema is perhaps the most important of our prayers. But the Shema, Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, it's not a prayer to God as much as it is a call to one another. Before we can call out to God, Shema Yisrael, we call, hear, O Israel, we call to each other. In order for us to establish a relationship with God, we first need to establish relationships with one another. And relationships, they are critical. They are crucial. They are what saved the Israelites when they were wandering in the wilderness. For 40 years, our people wandered. And at one point, an evil prophet named Bilam is sent to curse the Israelites. Bilam stands on a mountain above the Israelite camp and prepares to curse our people. But when Bilam looks down and he sees the tents of the Israelites, he sees their homes, and he sees that they're open and welcoming, that moment moves him to change his curse to a blessing. And from atop the mountain, he cries out, "How wonderful are your tents, O Jacob! Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov!" And I pray today that when people from the outside look to our community, that they are greeted warmly and similarly moved to say, "Ma tovu!" This is a special community. We all have a stake in transforming this world and our community. And we learn that from the custom of filling Elijah's cup with wine from everyone at the table. With a little wine from our own cups, a little sweetness from each of our lives given to the larger community, we can all ensure that all those who come through the doors of this holy place feel the presence of community and the possibility of God. And when we open our doors for Elijah, ushering in hopes and dreams of a brighter future, let's remember to leave the door open, inviting all those who sit on the periphery to come and be part of our holy community. Shabbat Shalom.